Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. Remember, Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Tonight is a live show. I will be answering questions from listeners that have written in. And also, if anyone has any questions, feel free to call at 646-716-7250 and press speak to the host. Before I get to the questions, I would just again like to announce my book, first book just came out, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. If you'd like to place an order, you can check out my publisher website at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. I know that's a lot, but it'll definitely be on my Facebook page, facebook.com/insightintohealing, with all my information. And please always check out the website for upcoming guests, upcoming show ideas, and also if anyone has any questions, feel free to send it to me in an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com or send me a private message. All names are confidential. I will not be saying any names or identifying information. So if you'd just like to send me a question or a show topic, please feel free to do it. Also, we'll be starting my book tour starting in May. It will be starting May 16th in Harrison, New York at Porta Napoli. So that'll be from 6:30 to 9 p.m. I will also be traveling to Long Island, Scarsdale, White Plains, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York City and Connecticut. So if anyone would like me to come visit your town, your Barnes & Noble, please send me an email with your information, and I'll definitely set something up. Also, I'd like to say that I've been studying to be trained in EMDR. And what is that? It's a therapy approach with a comprehensive approach that addresses the physiological storage of memory and how it informs an experience. A lot of this work is for trauma, PTSD. What it is when someone is going through a trauma, that memory is locked in their mind and stuck in that part of their brain and stored during that trauma. And what happens is it gets stored with that actual experience, with the negative cognitions. And with the EMDR and the eye movements, the bilateral stimulation, what it does is help unlock that memory, that trauma, and be able to start letting the neurotransmitter, letting the mind start to heal it, and also be able to start replacing it with positive cognitions. So I'm starting my second part two of that training next week, so I'm really excited. Then I'll have one more section for training, so definitely I've been starting to do that with clients, and I'll be doing more and more shows on EMDR. If you want to look up EMDR, it's EMDR Therapy Basic Training. Also, I would like to start with some questions that someone had written in. Dear Insight into Healing, my 18-year-old daughter has been isolating more and more and has severe mood swings. She's always angry and acts impulsively. What is wrong with her? Okay, first I would like to start is, you said it has been isolating more and more. How long has the isolation been going on, and when did it start? And also, has there been any major life events? Has there been a move? Has there been a change of school? Has there been a loss, a death, a recent breakup, either a happy event or a tragic event? Because sometimes these major life events can cause some disruption. And also, one, also check also, is there any idea or suspicion of substance abuse, drug abuse? Because sometimes when you see these severe behaviors and these severe mood swings come on so quickly, I would really want to be interested in what's been going on in this 18-year-old's life. How has she been this last year? I know sometimes it's hard for parents to go back and start really, you know, keeping a self-inventory of what her behaviors are, when they started noticing these changes. But these can be some really important red flags or important ideas and inferences for you as a parent to start putting those pieces of the puzzle together. And with the severe mood swings, I'm wondering, are they between manic? Are they very hyper? Is she staying up many nights in a row? Is there, you know, either oversleeping or not sleeping? Is there excessive spending? excessive sexually acting out behaviors, except, you know, doing more things in more of an impulsive way, to really look at that. And I think also at the highs and the lows, if they're lows, how low are the lows that she's experiencing? When you're saying that she's isolating more and more, I'm also wondering, is there a depression? And I think also, as I always say on my show, safety first, I'd want to ask this parent, is there any idea, do you have a feeling that there might be any sense of suicidal ideation or suicidal attempts? Has there been an attempt history or suicidal ideation history with your daughter or with anyone in this family? If there are any red flags or any questions that you think that this could be something to deal with, a suicide ideation or a suicide attempt or suicidal impulses, you definitely would always want to have her evaluated immediately, taking her to the emergency room if you really feel it's very important and very severe. I always say safety first. I would also, you know, being able to sit down and speak with your daughter. I'm not sure if you've been able to talk to her yet about this, but I think that's usually one of the best ways to open up this dialogue. And I know it's a hard dialogue to open up, but I find it's really important to sit down with her and see and let her know that you're aware, that you're concerned, and see if she can start to verbalize some of her feelings with the suicidal ideation, if there is any, or any thoughts that maybe this could be concern, is with the isolation, is she giving away her prized possessions? Is she not enjoying activities? Is she avoiding going out with friends? Is she not, you know, she likes to play softball. Is she missing going to softball? Is she not doing things she used to enjoy? Is she not hanging around with the family anymore? Is she not laughing? Is she alone in her room all the time? Is she not talking? Has she shut down? And I think really looking at that and being able to ask her on a scale from 1 to 10, 1, you wouldn't act on it. 10, you would act on it. Do you feel suicidal? Do you have any thoughts of wanting to hurt yourself or wanting it to end? And I think that's really important. I know it's hard for any parent or anyone to be able to have this conversation with a loved one, with a friend, with a family member, but I think it's really putting this discussion on the table and keeping that open dialogue. So, you know, so many times we see on the media, on social media, on television, of young people taking their own lives, adults taking their own lives, you know, major stars taking their own lives. I think it's really come to the part where we really have to be able to discuss this and explore that. So once you explore if there's any suicidal ideation, if there's any threat of safety, if that is not the case, I would also want to agree that she's always angry and acting impulsively. Are any of these behaviors dangerous behaviors? Is she putting herself in harm's way? And I think also speaking to her about it, is she able to control it? What is going on, and has this been a pattern? I think also, you know, going back to seeing, is there any substance abuse? Is there any drug abuse? A lot of these behaviors can be a sign of substance abuse, of drug abuse, of hiding certain behaviors. You know, is she always angry? Is it, you know, is she staying out late at night? Is she not coming home? Do you notice her drowsy? Is she falling asleep a lot? Is she in the bathroom a lot? What are her friends like? Have they changed? Are they new friends? And I think really getting to know who she is, and I know at 18 years old it's very hard to be a part of sometimes an 18-year-old's life. The last thing they really want is their parent, their mom to be around and know their friends and know what's going on. But I think it's really important, especially now with social media and all these other access to all these different things, it's really important to see what your daughter is associating with. What is she looking at on social media? I know it's a big privacy issue, and we don't want to ever, you know, go over anyone's privacy rights, but I think it's really important that since these erratic behaviors are happening, since there is some concern, it is important to be able to really keep that dialogue. I'm not sure if you have that type of relationship with your daughter to be able to speak openly about these type of things. If not, I think this is obviously the time to really be able to start to sit down and have this conversation with her. And if not, being able to take her either to your primary care doctor, to have her see a therapist, maybe a school counselor, a college counselor. Is she involved in any groups at school, at college, at high school, whatever she's in? Is she talking to someone? I think also having her friends, if they're trustworthy or people that she trusts, having them ask them questions. Have they seen or watched any some different behaviors from her? Do they have any red flags? And to find out. So one, I would definitely look into, is there any suicidality? Is there any suicide ideation? One, make sure that is first to make sure the safety concerns. Two, also to see if has there been any major life events, major changes, which can shift someone's mood, happy or sad. Is it an adjustment? Is there something going on that she needs to work on? And just because these things are causing, and this might have been some behaviors that have just started, seeking treatment doesn't mean there's anything really wrong with her. I think it's important. I think so many times seeking treatment, therapy, psychiatric care has a stigma to it. But it really shouldn't. It's just like any other, you know, diabetes, high cholesterol, cancer. When there's something wrong, we can't fix it on our own. We have to go to a professional. We have to get a team. Excuse me. We have to get a lot of knowledgeable people around us to support us and to help us. This is definitely something you don't want her to deal with on her own. And also you as a parent, not to have to deal with something like this on your own. So definitely, again, then look for, is there any substance abuse history? Has there been, or is this something new? Are these new friends? Are you finding any, are you finding pills? Are you finding needles? I mean, the heroin epidemic is growing and growing, unfortunately, becoming a larger and larger problem that I think, you know, so many times people don't think this is something that happens in their communities, but unfortunately it doesn't discriminate. It goes through all age groups, all money brackets, all races, all religions. So I think this is very important to have this conversation. And sometimes it does start with, so many times, if you've heard my past shows on the heroin epidemic, with prescription pills. Also, that brings up, has she been injured? Does she play sports? Has she been injured? Has she been on pain pills? To also really worry about that. Has she become addicted to that? What are her doctors saying? I think then also saying, is there something going on with her psychiatrically? I think, is there depression? A lot of times when there is depression, there can be the isolating. Also, you know, with bipolar, with the mood swings. I know there's a lot of different things that I'm exploring right now, but I think when you're saying what is wrong with her, it's really going through all the different options, different ideas, what could this be? And I think really being able to explore them. I know it's a lot easier said than done, and it's a tough road, but I think definitely at 18 years old, she is showing some signs with a severe mood swings and always angry and acting impulsively and isolating, that these are definitely some red flags. So I definitely would want you to really explore this further as a parent with your daughter, and also to be able to bring her in to get help, just to speak to somebody, just to explore what's going on. Because I think also at 18 is always that transition age of moving on to that next section of your life, that next stage of life. And for many teenagers, it's also a frightening time in their life. Sometimes they don't know which direction they're going. They don't know what career they want or what they major they want to major in college. And that can also be upsetting. But I think also letting them know that that is normal and that happens to have those questions, but to also see what is going on with these behaviors, and also to see, is there a way to help her develop coping skills for always being angry? Also, is there any anxiety? Because sometimes when there's a lot of anxiety, there's isolating, there's avoiding different situations so you don't become anxious. So I think it's really exploring with your daughter when this all began, if she knows when it began, how it began, if there was a trigger for it. And I think really opening up that dialogue and sitting down with her and being able to explore with her what's going on. Let's move on to our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, I'm a 35-year-old woman, and I do not feel good about myself at all. I feel like I haven't accomplished much in my life. I graduated college, and I work full-time, but I am not happy. What can I do to feel better about myself? I get this question a lot from women, from men, and I think there comes at different stages of your life, different places where I think the media, television, people expect that this is what your life is supposed to look like. You're supposed to have hit these different milestones. And many people feel if they haven't hit those milestones, something's wrong with them. So I think it's really saying, going back to this 35-year-old in your life, when you were younger, what did you envision your life to be? What were your dreams when you were younger? And I think really looking at your goals when you were younger, and then also looking at where you are now, and I think also trying not to be so hard on yourself, trying not to really judge yourself, to be able to be open about what's going on, because I think so many times people, we can all become so judgmental and so hard on ourselves that we don't acknowledge the accomplishments that we have. And I think, as you said, I've graduated college and I work full-time. When you graduated college, what were your goals in college? Did you study something that you really wanted to? And I know a lot of times, sometimes people study for what their parents expect them to study or what the world expects them to study, and that might not be their passion or their dream, so they feel like they're stuck. They feel like they haven't met their goals. So I think it's really saying, you know, you're 35 years old. You have a lot ahead of you. You can change your direction, your work direction, your educational direction, what your goals are. You know, so many times I tell people, you're not stuck in this one choice that, okay, this is what I went to college for. This is what my parents said I should be. This is what you have to be. And I think it's about finding out what makes you happy, being realistic and going after your goals. But that doesn't mean giving up your passion and giving who you are. Giving up who you are. And it sounds like you're also working full-time. Exploring what type of job are you doing? Is this a job that you just took just to have a job? And I think so many times you're pressured out of college just to take something, just to have a job, to get a paycheck, to get health insurance, to do what you're supposed to do. And I think you don't realize that by doing something like that, that can really hurt your self-esteem. That can really hurt your sense of self and who you are. So if you had walked into my office, what I would first start to want to do is really explore who your sense of self is, are, was. Who do you see who you are? What do you feel like you bring to the table? And what do you want from others that can sit at your table? When I'm talking at your table, you know, morals, characteristics, integrity, goals. And I think it's also being able to surround yourself with positive people, with people that can encourage you. So it's finding out, who are you? And when you were younger, how did you define yourself? Is this something where you're saying you're not feeling good about yourself at all? Was this something that has happened throughout your life? Has this been an underlying feeling that you've had for a very long time throughout your childhood, throughout your adulthood? Or is this something new? And I think that's really an important area to look at. To say, okay, when did this start? Has this been some underlying feeling from childhood, or is this something that's happening because of something with college or something with my job, or is it pressure from society where I feel that I need to be, or where I technically, as they would say, should be what society wants you to be? So I think really looking at that and then finding out, who are you? Who's your sense of self? And a lot of times when clients come into my office and we talk about developing sense of self, who are you? A lot of times people define it by what other people think of them, by what other external environmental triggers or definitions define them. I think when you're being defined by an outside external event, title, thought, description, that's very hard to live up to. I think it's making sure you build your sense of self. The sense of self comes from within. The sense of self comes with, how do you define yourself? What do you feel? What are your positive characteristics? What are some weaknesses you have, strengths and weaknesses? And I think being able to embrace them and being able to acknowledge them. And I think it's knowing that we're all human. We all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. But it doesn't mean just because we have a weakness that we're flawed, that there's something seriously wrong with us. I think it's being able to embrace them and being able to say, okay, sometimes these are just things of who we are, and are there things that we can work on? And I think also, what are the people you're surrounding yourself with? When you're saying, I'm just not happy, what about yourself, and you want to feel better about yourself? How, again, are you defining yourself? What are your friends, your peers, your coworkers, your family members? What type of atmosphere, environment are you living in? Are you tolerating? I think so many times people tolerate negative behaviors or certain relationships in their life because they feel like they have to. And they feel like it's okay, it's not really damaging, I know who this person is. But that is still damaging, allowing someone who is, you know, very criticizing and negative comments all the time. So I think it's really saying when you're not feeling good about yourself, is that coming from you? Or is that also coming from an outside source? And I think also, what is your daily routine? A lot of times people get caught up in and helping and doing everything for everybody else. And they get up, they go to work, they go to school, they run, they take care of everyone else. They come home, they go to bed, they get up the next day, and they do the same thing over and over again. So I think it's really saying, what are you doing for self-care? Self-care is so important. I think so many times it gets confused with what is self-care and what is being selfish. And it's so important. And it's always on media, don't be selfish, always take care of others. And believe me, I feel very, you know, I'm very confident that you always need to help others and give back to your community. But you also have to take care of yourself. And that's not being selfish. Self-care is being able to, how you're treating other people, taking care of other people, you need to have those same guidelines and rules for yourself too. You have to role model to other people. That's the best way to help others, is to role model and let people show people how well you treat yourself. And it's not about, you know, buying the most expensive clothes and doing anything like that, but it's being able to take care of yourself emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. What feeds you? And I think, you know, in my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, at the end of each chapter, I have many journaling exercises addressing different ways each person should take care of themselves physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And what is so important, I think so many times they say, oh, I don't have the time for that. There's too many other things going on. I can't take care of myself. I have so many other people to take care of. But that's building our sense of self. That's taking self-care. That's the way that we can stay whole. We give out so many little pieces of ourselves to so many different people, that when we come home at the end of the day, there's nothing left for us. There's nothing left to take care of. There's nothing left to for us to take care of. And I think it's important that we don't give all of ourselves so much to everybody else that we don't learn how to give it to ourselves. That's a really important lesson to teach your children, to teach your significant other, to teach peers, to teach the people that you're working with and around, that it's really important to always do self-care. And also about feeling better about yourself. What are you doing physically? A lot of times, you know, when you're feeling down, when you're feeling upset, I'm also a certified personal trainer and aerobics instructor, and I feel it's very important to be able to work out. And it doesn't mean you have to go to the gym 5 days a week and take all the hardest classes and torture yourself every day and be in pain. It's about finding something that fits for you and that works for you, not that what's the new fad and helps for everybody else, but what helps you? What do you enjoy? Because, yes, you know, working out sometimes for some people is not something they enjoy, but I think when you make a lifestyle change and you look for things that you enjoy, is it taking a yoga class? Is it going jogging? Is it going running? You know, is it working out at home or working out with friends? I think really fun, or taking a kickboxing class or even doing martial arts or swimming. I think it's really important to be able to find something that you find peace in. I think it's really saying, you know, when you're not feeling good about yourself and you're not happy, what in your life, is there small things in your life that you can work on making happy and being happy about? And I know there's a lot of things going on. We don't want to make huge, drastic lifestyle changes. The way lifestyle changes work is we do small changes. Is it, you know, going for that extra walk once a week? Is it sitting at the park? Is it doing something that you really enjoy? You know, laughing about something, acknowledging your accomplishments, being around people who are supportive of you. And I think it's really important for you to feel better. And then, you know, you're obviously, you know, 35, you feel like you're just never happy with yourself and you haven't really accomplished much in life. Well, I think you've graduated college and you're working full time. Those are two huge accomplishments. Maybe they're not exactly what you envisioned where you would be, but I think make sure you acknowledge that. but then also say, okay, so what now, what else would you like to do? Is this the job you really want? Is this where you saw yourself, where you would want to be? And I think starting slowly at what small goals, what are those small adjustments that you can do that can help you be happy? And I think also making sure this is not a competition with other people, with family members, with friends, with the media. I think it's really finding out what makes you happy. And I think it's also when you're trying to find out what makes you happy, you're also going to find out what doesn't make you happy. And that's okay. And don't think the first time you start doing it, you're going to start feeling this, you know, enjoyment and this really passion about something. It's okay to do things and say, you know what? Nope, that something's not going to work. Maybe taking that yoga class really didn't fulfill you the way you thought it would. Maybe it works great for your best friend, but for you, it just really didn't do it for you. And I think that's okay. It's being able to kind of be an observer of your life. What I tell a lot of my clients is when they want to come in with major changes, when they have a lot of different difficulties going on, and of course, I know it's great. You want to come in, you want to do the work, you want to get this done, you want to, you know, accomplish what you have to do, you want to solve your problems. Unfortunately, life doesn't work that way. And I think what happens is it's being an observer of your life. It could be for a week. It could be for a couple of weeks. And what I mean observer, be a non-judgmental observer. Kind of sit back and watch what you do. And I know it sounds strange, but kind of watch what your daily routine is. Look through it. Look at it. How do you feel when you wake up in the morning? What do you do when you first wake up in the morning? How do you feel at lunchtime? What are you doing before you go to bed? What are your routines? Who are you surrounding yourself with? Are there things you keep doing and doing that you don't enjoy? What are these small little adjustments can you do? How are your emotions feeling? Are you just surviving through the day, or are you thriving through the day? Do you have passion about what your life is about and where you want to go? And then think, really start looking at, okay, what's the next step? What are these small things? And it's going to probably take some time, so don't be discouraged. Don't be hard on yourself like you should, you know, this has to happen overnight. It's going to take time. This is redefining yourself. This is you as an adult woman at 35 years old deciding, okay, this is the direction of where my life is, and this is where I want to go, and that's okay. No one is supposed to be at a certain place hitting all these milestones. And it looks good on paper, but that's not really what reality is, and that's not really how life works. All right, so I think once, you know, write down, look at your life, be an observer, see where it goes, and then start finding those minor adjustments and different ways you can enhance yourself emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Let's go on to our third question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am a 45-year-old man and recently lost my job of 8 years. I don't know where to begin to rebuild. I'm starting to feel depressed. Do I need therapy? Yes, this happens a lot too. I think also at 45, you're at, again, a different life stage in your life and in your different milestones that you feel that you need to be. And I think, you know, any loss of a job, loss of a loved one, is still a loss. So I think it's also, you know, you're not safe. You really enjoyed this job of 8 years. Was this a job you really enjoyed? Is this a job you just felt like it was a job? But I think either way, it's, as I say, any type of loss is the grieving process. It's being able to grieve that loss and being able for yourself, which I know it's tough, to be able to sit with it. I say a lot in my book, being able to sit with the feelings, to sit with the uncomfortable feelings, the pain, and being able just to tolerate it. I know it's very hard not to want to not want to stay there and to want to distract yourself or, you know, sometimes self-medicate. But I think if we do not sit with the loss, we don't sit with sometimes those uncomfortable feelings and the pain and the emotions and the turmoil that we're going through, we never truly process it. We never truly heal. So I think, one, really sitting with the loss of your job and, you know, saying what happened, kind of looking through it, observing what had happened, and then saying, where do you want to begin? And I said, you said you're not sure where you want to begin, where you want to rebuild. And it's really taking a nice self-inventory of yourself is, what are your goals? How do you feel about yourself? How do you feel? What would make you happy? Another therapist, a colleague of mine, had said to me, if a miracle would happen, what would it look like? And how would you feel? How do you think you would feel if this miracle happened? what would you, how would you feel differently? If the miracle occurred, how would you know it happened? Because how would you feel? And I think being able to allow yourself to explore these feelings, sometimes a lot of people don't want to explore these feelings because that the hope of something better, they don't want to be disappointed, they don't want to get the, you know, get excited about something and be disappointed. But in life, that happens. And I think, you know, a lot of times people don't want to take risks. And I'm not talking about risky behaviors, dangerous behaviors, or impulsive behaviors. But taking some sort of risk, some sort of change is healthy. And it does happen. We all take different risks. I think sometimes if we always not take a risk and just do things that, you know, we think we're supposed to be doing, or that is the easiest thing that comes to us, really looking at that and saying, is this something that satisfies me? Is this something that I can work with? And some people can be very happy with that, and that's what makes them happy. But I think for this 45-year-old man, it's really looking at himself and trying to say, what makes you happy? What type of job? What would be your dream job? What is the reality of this dream job? What steps would you have to take to achieve this dream job? And I think really finding that. And now you're saying, I'm starting to feel depressed. I think looking at this depression, was this depression after the loss of the job? Or is it you're just noticing it more because there's been a recent loss of the job, or there's been a change that it really kind of shines light on what's going on in your environment? I think really looking to see when you're feeling depressed, is it just a grief? Or do you feel like, again, the first question, are you isolating? Do you feel like it's really impacting your quality of life? Are you not enjoying things you usually enjoy? Are you kind of shutting down and being by yourself? And I think that's also important, again, to look at that and say, you know, do I need therapy? Therapy, I think sometimes it's not about, you know, as I said before, about being sick. It's not about a stigma. It's not that something's wrong with you that you need to have therapy. I think going to therapy doesn't always have to mean something's wrong. Sometimes going to therapy and using that as a sounding board, using that as a platform to explore different things that have happened in your life, different goals, different feelings. I think so many times, you know, during a day, if you really look at all the different emotions and the different experiences that each person interacts with, it's a lot for the mind to process. So I think going to therapy, if that's something, even the question, do I need therapy, it sounds like something is telling you, okay, there's something I might want to work on. There's something I might want to talk about. So I think it's, you know, really then if feeling about that, what type of therapy would you be interested in? Is it, you know, the client base? Is it, you know, there's short-term therapy, there's long-term therapy, you know, and really saying, okay, what do you think would fit and suit your needs and where you are in your life right now? I think then it's finding a therapist. And I think that's also something I like to tell my clients and to tell, you know, also my listeners, is finding a therapist is for you. You're not finding a therapist to get the therapist approval, to meet the therapist standards. You want to find a therapist that you feel comfortable with. You want to feel a therapist that you can be vulnerable, who's not going to be judgmental. You know, and I think so many times, sometimes it's not that the therapist is going to tell you to do risky behaviors or not, you know, at some point say, hey, that can be dangerous. Of course, those type of things. But I think it's finding a therapist that you feel like you can be yourself with. You know, going to therapy and not telling the therapist how you really feel or hoping they don't judge you or they don't want, you know, they might not like me or they might not, you know, think horribly of me. That's not what therapy is about. Therapy is about you. It's about your work. It's about how you're feeling and how the therapist can help you build off that platform, which I think is really, really incredible. And I think it's also finding what type of therapy. As you know, you do the psychodynamic therapy, and as if also I was talking about EMDR that I spoke about in the beginning, I think it's really, that's, you know, for trauma. That is for PTSD, returning veterans, first responders, firemen, policemen, people who are on the front line, or also people who have seen tragic events and who have witnessed things that are hard to process. I think also finding out, has there been any trauma in your life? I think sometimes, you know, when people are so busy during the day or so busy during their life, they really don't, they kind of say, oh, that happened in my childhood. This doesn't have, you know, not really what's going on. So I think with EMDR, it's really helping you figure out, you know, are these different maladaptive approaches, coping skills, defense mechanisms that you've developed, are they stopping you or, you know, standing in your way of being a healthier person. And EMDR is, you know, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It's really taking that stuck thought, that stuck negative cognition, and moving it from that locked part of your brain and being able for the body to heal. As the instructor Karen Alter Reed said during this training, is that the body has a normal response when there's a cut. It wants to heal. Same thing with the brain. The brain wants to heal. So when you're feeling, you know, I'm starting to feel depressed, I'm not feeling good about yourself, the body, the mind is giving you a sign, okay, something is going on. We need to heal it. And sometimes we can't do it on our own. So going to therapy can help open up that channel, can help open up that dialogue. So I think it is, you know, if you're feeling the interest in therapy, maybe finding a therapist, meeting with a couple of people, and also, you know, taking a self-inventory of, you know, what would you like to work on? Is there something you want to work on? Is it, you know, finding a new goal? I think, is it about your last job? What about being there 8 years? That's a long time being at a job. How do you feel about that? Was that something you enjoyed? And I think really exploring that. And then what other job would you like to do? And I think also with the depression, how serious is the depression? Is this, you know, short-term, I'm very, you know, because of the environment, because of a certain event that the depression has been triggered? Or is it something that's kind of been this underlying, ongoing feeling throughout your life? And I think sometimes it's hard to, you know, to grasp that, to think about that. Is this something that's kind of been with me that I've pushed aside? But I think it's really important, too, for you to be able to really look at all of this. And it's hard work, and I totally understand it's hard work, and it's very hard to be vulnerable, and it's hard to sit down and really explore all these areas and kind of open up that wound. But I always tell people a lot of times when they come into therapy, the first couple of sessions can be really, really tough, and a lot of times people say, I don't know why, this is worse than what I'm feeling, this really feels horrible, these first couple of sessions. But that's what happens. You know, it can happen because we're talking about things that have upset you. We're talking about recent trauma or recent loss or a recent upsetting event. And for me to get to know you, for me to realize what's going on in your life, is to be able to talk about it. And I think sometimes we hold secrets through our life or family secrets or negative monologues that have been in our mind for years. So to be able to verbalize it and to be able to come out and speak about it and have an outsider, an objective person hear that and verbalize it really gives power to our thoughts. It also gives power to ourself. And I think it's taking our power back and empowering ourselves to be able to speak about what's going on and not to feel ashamed and not to feel guilty, but to be able to say, okay, this is what I need to move forward and to be healthy. So I think for this person, one, you know, I would definitely go over the recent loss of the job, explore that, see how you feel with that. I think with the depression, how, you know, rate yourself, as I said, with the first question, where is your depression? Is it one where it's not that high, it's just kind of this sadness about the loss, or is it on a scale of 5 where it's starting to impact your quality of life and the way you're functioning, the way you're living? Or is it very serious where you're having thoughts of wanting to hurt yourself or just thoughts of not wanting to move forward? And again, if it's at any of those high levels, definitely seek treatment immediately. This is not something that, you know, you should be working on your own, but to definitely to reach out, to get a team, to get a network, and to also work with people. And I think, you know, looking at the depression and also then finding a therapist and seeing where is that for you. And again, also maybe seeing a psychiatrist for an evaluation. Seeing a psychiatrist doesn't mean you always have to be on medication, but I think it's better just to always have that evaluation, to see what the psychiatrist says, see what if there's a diagnosis, see what their recommendations are. But again, this is your therapy. This is your treatment. So it's for you to find out what works for you. And how are you feeling with everything that is going on in your life? Are you happy with what's going on in your life? What do you want to work on? And I think it's being able to really be honest with yourself and be vulnerable. I know it's really tough in the beginning, but just being open to it. Well, tonight's show, since I'm just on the show here tonight, is only going to be about 45 minutes long. So about the last part of the show, I really wanted to go back again to EMDR and first talk about dissociation. And dissociation is the mental ability and the set of symptoms secondary to trauma that has revitalized in the past 10 years. And what happens with dissociation is being able to compartmentalize. We do that all, you know, normally in our lives, the ability to divide our attention to different ways, as if you're driving and you're being able to divide your attention to different things. But some type of questions to work with the professionals to find out if EMDR is appropriate are some questions we have that are on the dissociative experience scales. So on this scale, on these questions, I'm just going to go over a couple of questions because we don't have much time left. But think of some of these questions and say this happens either 0% of the time, 10% of the time, 20%, 30, 40, 50, 60, up to 100%. And just take a mental note of it and see where you are. Here's question one. Some people have the experience of driving a car and suddenly realizing they don't remember what has happened during all or part of the trip. What percentage of the time does this happen to you? I know this can happen a lot. And if you start rating yourself on these and you start, don't start self-diagnosing, don't get concerned. These, again, are just questions to think about, just to observe and see how you're answering. Some people have the experience of finding themselves dressed in clothes that they don't remember putting on. What percentage of this time does this happen to you? Some people sometimes find that they are approached by people that they do not know who call them by another name or insist that they have met them before. Some people find that they have no memory for some important events in their lives, for example, a wedding, a graduation. Some people sometimes have the experience of feeling that other people, objects, and the world around them are not real. Some people sometimes have the experience of feeling that their body does not belong to them. I think, again, going through these questions and really rating yourself, and do any of these sound familiar to you? Some people sometimes find that when they are alone, they talk to themselves out loud. Now, that can happen a lot, too, and it doesn't, you know, and then I think also looking at some of these questions, are you doing that to memorize something? You know, are you speaking to an animal? Are you speaking to something else? I think really being able to look at what these different questions and the different events and the different experiences that you have. Some people find evidence that they have done things that they do not remember doing. Some people sometimes find writings, drawings, or notes among their belongings that they do not remember doing. Some people find that they sometimes hear voices inside their head that tell them to do things or comment on things that they are doing. And then some people sometimes feel as if they're looking at the world through a fog, so that people or objects appear far away or unclear. These are just some basic questions, again, that are on the dissociative experiences scale. It's by different people going over different ways of finding out about dissociation and also finding out if you're appropriate for EMDR. I will also be having some more trainings with the EMDR, so as I progress with that, I will definitely be updating all my listeners on my different shows on different things that I'm learning and also sharing that the education with you. And again, please, if you have any questions, send it to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And also remember, you can find my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. I know that's a long one, but I'll definitely be posting all of this information on Insight into Healing. Again, finding it on Insight Healing on facebook.com/insightintohealing. Again, everyone, I just want to thank you so much for tuning in this evening. Thank you so much for all your support. And I cannot wait for all of you also to read my book, because it also covers a lot of the stuff that we've done here on Insight into Healing. So again, I wanted to thank all of you for everything that you've ever done, and thank you for all your support. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.